Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We had to wear pads in December, and that's not fair.
Can you be any softer?
From coast to coast, when it comes to football, Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans are talking nothing but the stinking truth.
This is a leadership issue. This is an optics issue. This is your quarterback.
There's certain things that always tell the truth. Physicality in the run game always tells the truth. Yoga pants always tells the truth.
Now, here's your hosts, Mark and Mike.
Hey, welcome into the Stinking Truth Podcast on the Odyssey Radio Network. However you listen to us, whether you listen to us on Odyssey or on Apple or on Spotify or you watch us on YouTube, thank you so much for making us a part of your day. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure you join us every single week. But it is our pleasure right now on the Stinking Truth Podcast to introduce to you the head coach of the New York Giants and welcome John Harbaugh to the show. John, man, it's great to have you, buddy.
Doing great, Mark. Great to be with you. Great to be on your great podcast, man. It's a talking ball. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I after 18 seasons with the Baltimore Ravens, now as the New York Giant head coach, just walk me through it. What happened there and why now in New York?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of amazing things happened over a long time and a lot of great moments, a lot of fights, a lot of life. You know, life was lived, relationships built, all the different things you go through. That was all it. Then that was that chapter, and God chose to close that chapter and move us to the next one. And I'm just thrilled and excited, man. So how did it happen? I give it to God. God made it all happen the way He wanted it to happen. There was a lot of story to it, and a lot of great little things that happened. I'm just thrilled to be here. I mean, this is a great organization, great city, great bunch of guys.
You know, we always talk about resetting a culture and coming in and putting it together, and here you are who you built an unbelievable culture in Baltimore all those years. Now you're in the New York, the community, the Giants in general. So what's the most important part about setting up your football team and creating a culture that you want to have there as the head coach and the man in charge of the New York Giants?
No question. Well, the culture is reflective of a couple of things. One thing it should be reflective of, if you want to call it the culture, is the self-evident truth of the universe that apply to football. And those are things that we talk about all the time. How you got to work, how you got to play, what type of style that you have, just what football requires. Those things have got to be things that we excel at. And just the guys, so make sure the guys understand that. And you got to have the right guys, because the guys really do build the culture. What the guys believe in, what they're about, the players are going to establish how you play. They're going to play the way they play. If you want a tough team, have tough players. You want a big team, fast team, strong team, have big, fast, strong players, you know. You want a committed, dedicated team, get committed, dedicated guys, you know. So that's what we've tried to do. I believe the Giants have that. I love the way they've been working. So we're trying to build that and then have a shared understanding, Mark, about, you know, what we believe. Let's come to an understanding through time, through experiences, day-to-day process. Let's come to an understanding about what we believe and how we're going to play and what our plans are when we go to battle.
You know, this week has been, there's a little bit of social media dust up, which is something that I never had to deal with as a player. And probably when you first came in the league, you didn't have to deal with, but you have to deal with now. And Jackson Dart and Abdul Carter, and obviously they have said they've, you know, it's water on the bridge. They're fine now. But how do you address your team with things like that, with political things and religious things and things of that nature? How do you address Jackson and Abdul Carter?
Yeah, I'd say we address it, Mark, the way we address everything. It's we confront everything. You know, everything that has to do with our football, we confront. And anything that has to do with our locker room and our team unity and or how we relate to one another, that's really important. So we confront it. You know, we just talk about it. That's what we do. And then we come to an understanding, like I said, a shared understanding about how we're going to handle it. And really, it starts with the players. So the players start talking. I ask them what they think, how they feel about it. And then we come to an understanding about how they think and feel about it. And we go from there. And then they establish how we're going to how, you know, with, and yeah, I'm part of it, but really they've got to believe in it. You can't come in there like the dictator and start saying, hey, this is how we're doing this. This is how we're doing that. You know, this is an operational type of a thing. How do we want to handle social media? How do we want to approach politics, religion? How do we want to approach family? How are we going to deal with all these things going forward? So it was an opportunity with a real life situation that came up outside of the season to kind of set the boundaries for our approach during the season. And really the players set the course with that. And they did a great job, Mark. They did a great job. It was great in the leader meeting. Then it was great in the team meeting. I thought they were fabulous. And I feel like we're ready to roll, man. I think we're better, you know, because we went through that last weekend.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Obviously, that's the locker room is one of the most forgiving places in the world, and you know, we all push the same way. And I always say, man, I wish people could experience what we experienced in the locker room, because regardless of economic backgrounds, regardless of, you know, of race, regardless of religion, we're all coming together to do something special. And we all have to rely on each other. We all have to sacrifice for one another. So the locker room becomes one of those great places, one of those great melting pots where you really realize, John, that we've got so many more things that bond us together and that make us alike than we do that separate us. Right. And that's one of the coolest things about being part of a football organization, being part of a football team.
Well, I would hope that, like, if there's anything we can do in football, because it's the ultimate team sport, is be a reflection for society about the way things can be in terms of putting the team first. And putting the team first starts with mutual respect. You have to respect other people. You have to respect their opinions. You have to respect their background. You have to respect their beliefs, their circumstances, their situations. And you have to respect them enough to meet them in their circumstances and situations and with their beliefs. And if I mean, you know, not to preach here, but like on a football team, you have to do that in the locker room, or you're not gonna get along, because, man, we are together in this thing. We have a mission. We're trying to win football games, be the best team we can be, run a play really well. And it's unforgiving in there. If you're not about that, then you know what? You're not gonna be accepted in the locker room. So you have to respect your teammates. You have to respect the process, the mission, to be respected and accepted in the locker room. And that's something that should be true in our society too. If we would apply a heavy dose of respect for one another, you know, in our discourse and our conversation, we'd probably do a lot better as a team in a society setting, and be a lot happier maybe in society. I just hate seeing all these arguments and all these fights and all the way we belittle one another way, way, way too much. You don't have that in the locker room, to your point, Mark. You don't see that in the locker room. Why? Because it's unacceptable to treat one another that way in a locker room. That's the great thing about football.
Yeah, it is. It's an incredible sport. There's no question about that. Speaking of just football in general, Jackson Dart, we saw a lot of guys in the league last year, second year quarterbacks, you know, like Bo Nix here in Denver where I live, or Caleb Williams in Chicago, really kind of take that next step and really develop. Where is Jackson Dart on his journey? And you've had a guy in Lamar Jackson where you kind of turned the NFL up on its head in the way you used him, not only to run the ball, but to throw the ball and all the different things, weapons that he has. That Jackson Dart, I'm not going to say he's Lamar, but he's got some of those things. So how do you manage him? Where is he in the process of growing as a quarterback for the New York Giants?
That's a great question. It's the same process with Lamar, or it's the same process that was with Joe Flacco, in the sense of you try to figure out what he's really great at. The thing about Jackson is he does a lot of things really well. He's kind of like Lamar that way. He can do a lot of different things. Like you said, not the same, but the same idea. So we got to find all those different things, all those different plays that he does well. He's got a lot of unique talents that we're just kind of uncovering, and we're kind of trying to figure out how we want to tie it all together right now. But he's in the process of doing that. We're in the process of figuring that out. You know, one day he lights it up. The next day, yesterday, the defense had a pretty good day, but he also made a bunch of plays. So play by play, we're trying to kind of unfold it. And like he saw some new routes. We put in some new routes yesterday that were things he's seen for the first time. But I really think he picks things up quick, Mark. I mean, I think he's got like a natural feel for the game, which is really exciting as a coach.
Give us a little update on Malik Nabers, a guy that, you know, incredible rookie year, no question about it. Obviously injured the ACL coming back from that. Where is he, and what are your expectations of him
moving forward this season?
Well, I know he's going to be back. You know, he's going to be back in the season, and certainly I think early in the season at worst, possibly to start the season. Hopefully that's the goal. But, you know, he's working his butt off. He's every day doing his best. And, you know, I just you can't worry about it too much. You just got to, you can't say it's going to be this or that because you never really know. That's that those time frames are not in our control. We can't foresee the future. But I'm hopeful he'll be back to start the season, and I'm hopeful he'll be 100%. But I also think naturally with an injury like that, you know, guys are going to keep building as they come back and get their football legs back underneath them. So he's a super, in my opinion, he's one of the top receivers in football. He's going to be a top receiver, maybe the top receiver in football. I know that's his goal, and that's, of course, we'd love to see that happen.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, on the draft, man, I loved, you know, I always kind of piddle around and study guys in the first round. And I want to talk about your two first rounders because I think both those guys are phenomenal players. And you got a little pushback, I think, in the local media about Reese because they were like, hey, we need, you know, you got an edge guy. But as I studied him at Ohio State, he was all over the football field. And I think it makes it a lot easier as an offense, you know, when you break the huddle and you know where a guy's going to be. Reese is one of those dudes that can be all over the place. He can be an off the ball linebacker. He can be an edge rusher. He can do a lot of different things as a blitzer for you. I thought that was a really good pick. How do you kind of expect to use a guy like that? And what did you see in him that made you want to draft him so high?
Well, that's right. I mean, you hit it right on the head, Mark. I mean, you just nailed the evaluation. And our defense has been structured that way for a number of years. Even the coaches that are running the defense that have gone, like, you know, like Mike or like Jesse, you know, those guys, you see it in those defenses too, the way they use their guys. Reese is the type of guy for us that fits us because we want to move guys around. We line up in a variety of different fronts, then we flip positions within the fronts. So guys do different things and you can't be too predictable in terms of like IDing the pressures or even just the run stunts too. We want to move guys around, but he's going to be a linebacker. He's going to be a Mike. He's going to be a Will. He's going to be on the edge weak. He's going to be on the edge strong. He might kick down over a guard. We'll be moving him into those spots, stemming, things like that. He'll be in coverage. He'll be rushing. That's how we want to play defense. So for us, that's a perfect fit. And if anybody was really knowing, understanding the way that we like to play defense, they would have seen that he was kind of an ideal guy for us. So I don't blame the media. They don't always know like you do. They don't really recognize sometimes the structure of things, but I anticipate he's going to be a perfect fit for our defense.
And I love the Maui Noah kid, if I'm saying that right, but great feet. I always say this, feet have to work in a union, but hands have to be independent contractors. I thought he was so good at Miami. I thought his hands were great. I thought he was a dominant player. And one thing I know about you, you're going to build a big physical football team. I thought that was a perfect fit. I love bringing Ricard with you because that's one of my favorite players in the National Football League. I feel like the New York Giants are going to come back to Big Blue and have that kind of dominance on both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's the goal, you know, and he's that guy for sure. And I just agree with you so much. He's another natural, you know, he ties it all together well. It's not hard for him to have his feet in the right place and get his punch on people in a violent kind of way, man. I don't think he's going to have any problem going to guard. He could play tackle. Mm-hmm. But he's going to play guard for us this year. And man, he looks like he's played it his whole life so far in practice. I can't, you know, the pads are coming. And I think he's going to be even better when the pads come on.
Yeah, two quick things left for you, okay? I want to just ask you real quick. You've won a championship. The New York Knicks are going through it right now. They're going to the NBA Finals. Mike Brown has won 4 championships, but never as a head coach. What advice would you give Mike Brown?
Man, Mike Brown does not need my advice. It's the last guy he needs advice from is me. He knows what he's doing. I just think it's awesome. I mean, I want to know how you capture that chemistry. How you get that, how you tie that together, man. They got lightning in a bottle. They are playing like the ultimate team. They are playing like the ultimate team. I want to learn from that.
Yeah, no question about it. Me too. And then lastly, I know you're proud of, by the way, you know, you're still my dad's favorite coach. Ever since we had that meeting together and you told my dad that he looked better than me, which I want to say, I think you're a dick for doing it, but I appreciate you.
I mean, you know, okay. Don't be offended. Just get better, Mark. Just get better.
Yeah, I'm just trying. I'm going to just try it. He still is doing great, by the way. And it still looks the same, man. The guy's a freak show. But the Harbaugh Coaching Academy, talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Harbaugh Coaching Academy, we did was we've taken over the last 5 years, man. We've built videos and articles for basically young coaches and youth coaches and high school coaches, college, really any kind of coach. I mean, I look at it, I watch the videos, interviews with Andy Reid, I mean, Dan Campbell, Mike McDonald, Jesse Minter. You go through the whole thing. We got interviews with Bill Belichick. It's awesome. And also in other fields, and also businessmen, just about teaching and leadership and just ideas, just conversations like you're doing, conversations that make us better. So, you know, dig in, man. It's free. It's an awesome deal. It's something that we are like committed to and love. And it starts kind of with a coaching basis. It's also kind of a life basis too, a business basis, a team building idea, all those kind of things. And it's just to help people think about stuff maybe and hear from some really great leaders.
All right.
Appreciate you bringing it up.
You got it, buddy. Hey, man, it's always a pleasure. I always love connecting with you, and hope to get to call one of your games this year and get to meet face to face and just continue the football conversation, man. I appreciate you, buddy.
You can come to training camp too if they'll let you in. I don't know. Do they let Washington guys in? I don't know. I'll have to see.
I make that move. I think they'd let me in.
Yeah, I think they would.
Yeah.
All right, man. Good talking to you always.
Take care of yourself, bud. I'll talk to you soon.
You too, man. See you. Appreciate you.
Okay, when we come back, it's all about Washington, D.C. It's all about the Commanders. And can Jaden Daniels have a bounce back year in year three? We'll talk about it when we return.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Let's love!
Welcome back to the Stinking Truth Podcast all across the Odyssey Radio Network. I'm Mike Evans along with Stink, Mark Schlereth. And Mark, there's a lot of optimism coming from Jaden Daniels about really a bounce back season. He's excited about a comeback. Are you excited about what he's going to be able to do in year three? The big leap year for young quarterbacks, year three.
Yeah, think about year one and how remarkable year one was. And you know you were going to probably have somewhat of a regression because 69% completion, started 17 of 17 games. You know, the guy was, he was remarkable. 3,568 yards, 25 TDs, 9 interceptions, also ran the ball 148 times for 891 yards, 6 TDs. The most remarkable thing he did his rookie year, 20 of 23 conversions on fourth downs, I believe 8 of 8 passing on fourth down. So they were absolutely incredible. But I think there was a couple of things, man. He took some shots his rookie year. He got hit a couple times his rookie year that were like big time hits. There were some issues there. And of course, now you have the injury things from last year. Only started 7 games. He went from 69% completion percentage down to 60% completion percentage. So he had a drop off. But here's what I love about Jaden Daniels. And I did several of his games his rookie year. So I sat down at the table with him, talked to the coaches about what he was doing. There were a couple things that just impressed me. First and foremost, the dude is the first dude in the building, the last guy out of the building. He is a professional football player. So anytime you've got a guy that puts that amount of work into it, you know good things are going to happen to you as a franchise. He spent all kinds of times, and this was under Cliff Kingsbury. It was cool. I put on his goggles, his Oculus goggles or whatever they are, his AI stuff. And so he sits for hours every night, and Cliff Kingsbury used to record all the play calls for him. And so it would be like he was sitting in the football field, and they'd have the plays run up. And so Cliff would you know, would record the play. So it would be like him in the huddle getting the plays in his ear and then calling the play and then being on the line of scrimmage and setting the motions and then, you know, throwing the ball where he's supposed to throw the ball. So he's not only the first guy in the meeting, you know, or in the building, he's the last guy out. And then he goes home and just does nothing but work on football stuff. It's incredible. As a matter of fact, I had him in a game in Arizona where the Washington Commanders just crushed the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, they crushed them. And I have him. So I show up to the hotel that they're in because I've got this Saturday morning meeting. And Jaden is the one of the first guys that I'm doing the meeting with. So I meet with Jaden and then I'm meeting with Cliff Kingsbury. And Cliff is like, man, I'm in my makeshift office here in the hotel, like in the basement of the hotel, and I'm just grinding through whatever I'm grinding through. And all of a sudden, 5 a.m., here's Jaden Daniels popping his head in the office. What are we working on? Like, I'm up. I'm doing my stuff. I'm getting myself prepared. So from a preparation standpoint, the guy is a professional Mike football player. And that's why I think so highly of him. That's why I think he'll have this great bounce back. It's about keeping him healthy. The other thing to me is David Blau is going to be a first-time former quarterback, which seems to be this in vogue, trendy thing to go on. First-time quarterback was our first-time offensive play caller was a backup quarterback throughout his whole career. Didn't play a whole lot of games. And all of a sudden, you're taking over the reins of the offense. And I say this all the time, man. There's a difference between calling plays and calling an offense. And how do you set that stuff up? The other thing that I have seen time and time again in this league is a lot of those guys that play quarterback don't necessarily tie the run game in the play action game to the passing game. They don't necessarily tie it all together really well, especially as first time play callers. So that concerns me a little bit for Jaden Daniels having that bounce back year three.
Yeah. What do you make of this trend? It seems like it's really kind of burst on the scene here. The idea of the recent backup quarterback in the NFL, only a couple years removed from playing, only a couple years of experience, but now getting a chance to call plays. David Blau in D.C., Sean Mannion in Philly, Davis Webb in Denver.
Yeah. I think it concerns me, and what concerns me, like I understand the principle behind it, right? These guys just came out of the locker room, and they can have those conversations, right? There is that connection between player and between coach, right? They speak the same language. I just went through it. I can help walk you through it. I think all those aspects, you're young, so you relate and all that, you know, all that baloney that is part of, you know, today everybody's in their own feelings type of thing,
that's
right?
That's baloney, huh? Yeah.
Oh, it's complete garbage. You can either communicate or you can't, whether you're, you know, 75 or whether you're 25. If you can communicate with guys and you can have those conversations and those hard conversations, like guys respect you regardless. I think players respect other players, guys who have done it before, that like as opposed to a guy that's never actually played at this level. I think there's a lot of that makes that a little bit easier. But you can either communicate or you can't. Like it doesn't. Age has nothing to do with that. There are plenty of old guys that can communicate. There's plenty of young guys that communicate. I think so. I don't think that is that big a deal. I think the issue that I see with a lot of these play callers that get their first opportunities to call plays that, you know, or passing game coordinators or former quarterbacks is, do you understand the value of the run game? Do you understand the philosophy of the run game? And can you tie that run game, make your play action? Can you create your core set of tenets and plays? And can you build off that core set to make it match perfectly in your play action game and in your passing game to your run game? And, you know, I've probably told you this before. I'll tell you again. I was consulting for a team that wanted to run the ball better. You know, former quarterback guy wanted to run the ball better. And he says to me like, yeah, I brought you in here because I want, you know, I just really want to run the ball better. And I go, do you? And he's like, yeah, that's why you're here. You know, you really want to focus on the wide zone. We really want to run, but do you? Yeah, that's why you're here. And I go, but do you really want to? And he's like, hey, listen.
Now he's looking at you like.
Right, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And so I said, let me tell you what drives me crazy about you, why I don't like you. And he's like, oh, God, here we go, right? And I said, because you'll run it four times for 2 yards a carry, and you'll throw your arms up in the air, and you'll be like, man, we just can't run the ball. But then I go, you'll turn around and let that crappy quarterback that plays for you throw seven incompletions in a row. And so it's a philosophy of, I've got to understand that even in a 2 yard run, as long as we finish the play on our terms, as long as we're physical and we beat people up, there's unbelievable value in a 2 yard run. And the problem with most guys who play quarterback is they don't understand that. They don't understand the value, what it does for you in your play action game, what it does for your offensive linemen in pass pro. Now, all of a sudden, it may not be for a lot of yards per carry, but we're getting our attempts and we're smashing you. Now, all of a sudden, in a critical situation where I've got a 5-step drop and I got to get the ball out of my hand, I can all of a sudden attack you like it's a run play and stymie your pass rush right there on line of scrimmage. Do you know the value that that has for an offensive? So I worry about that stuff because a lot of that stuff doesn't, like, guys want to throw the ball. They want to become dynamic in the passing game. They want to really develop their quarterback, and they don't understand the value and how that affects the quarterback.
But they're not trying to win you over, right? They're trying to win owners over who are going to be looking to replace their head coach,
right?
Their older head coach,
sure,
with somebody new, young, fresh, dynamic. Mm-hmm. And let's introduce the Odyssey Radio Network all across these NFL great cities listening right now to your theory about what NFL owners want when it comes to young play callers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And why?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they want a young offensive play caller to become the next head coach because that's like Viagra to 80-year-old owners, man. They can't get enough of that stuff. That stuff makes them stand at attention. So that's what they want.
Really, that's why these young coordinators they're like, yeah, yeah, okay, Mark Schlereth yelling at clouds about running the football, right, and everything like that. We're throwing it, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Put it in the air, man. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get it out there. And so, I mean, I understand why, but you also have to understand, like, even when Jaden Daniels had the great rookie year, and he did, he still took, I think, well, let me, I wrote it down. He still took 47 sacks. And it's just so hard to overcome when you get that kind of pressure and you have those kind of issues happening to you. It's really hard to overcome. You have a sack in any given drive, Mike, any given drive. It ends the drive. It goes down to about maybe a 30% chance, or excuse me, like a 7 to 10% chance of scoring anytime you give up a sack during any given drive. So, like, it's one of those things that is a serious issue. And how do you avoid some of that? Well, you avoid some of that by the way you call plays, by the way you set up your run game, by the way you take your quarterback out of harm's way, by the way you create, you know, short, quick passing game, the intermediate passing game where the ball's out of your hands quickly. All those things are important.
But let's talk about another quarterback in Jaden Daniels' class.
Yeah.
That very celebrated class. And that, of course, is J.J. McCarthy. Help me out with this one, because I'm genuinely confused about this. Okay. So J.J. McCarthy said there's no awkwardness between him and Kyler Murray when it comes to who gets to be the starting quarterback in Minnesota. This is a league, Stink, that tends to be uber patient with young quarterbacks, even when it becomes painfully obvious that this kid can't play. Teams will continue to give that kid ultimate chances. So why does it seem like Minnesota, why does it seem like the Vikings have already made up their mind on J.J.?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm not inside that building, so I don't know. But I think one of the most important things you can do when you have made the decision that you made a mistake is to rip off the Band-Aid. Trey Lance in San Francisco, rip it off, move on. We found a guy in Brock Purdy that we love. Let's move on. Let's do this. I think one of the things that really is interesting about Minnesota and Kevin O'Connell, Kevin O'Connell is obviously the head coach, the play caller, but Kevin O'Connell, and I've sat down and talked to him many times about premium plays and, you know, and the kill it package and how many, like how many different things there are. And think about what's on a quarterback's plate. Like, I've never played quarterback, but there's a lot of stuff on your plate, right? I mean, you've got to understand the formation. You've got to understand what you're getting into. In the formation, in the passing game, you got to understand every tagged route, every route combination. But you're not just looking at, you're not looking at the route combinations. You're looking at the defense they're playing, right? Are they in a single high safety? Are they a two high safety? Are they boundary safety rotation? Are they field safety rotation? Where are they going? What are they in? And based on the movement, either middle of the field closed, middle of the field open, and the movement key, where am I supposed to throw the football in this particular situation? Am I a split field read? So am I reading the strong side? If I get this, I'm getting to the weak side and all that kind of stuff. So there's so many different things on there, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like every play has a check or a kill it or a can it package, and you're running the play based on the defense that you're getting off the bat. So now you're walking up the line of scrimmage and you're calling a play, and this West Coast offense, man, it has like trips, like if you think about trips right, nasty, H left outside, X branch Viper, can it with 18 handoff strong. And now you're walking up there and you've got to understand every tagged route, everything that's going on there. I'm reading, you know, the front side, I'm reading the through, the picture. So then all of a sudden you're going, okay, now I'm snapping the ball and I got to process all that information and I got to read the defense and I got to make sure I'm right. And listen, there's a lot of guys that can do it on a grease board. There's very few guys that can actually do it on a football field.
But that's your job as an organization. If you're Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings, that's your job to understand that maybe J.J. McCarthy. Remember, he's coming out of Michigan, and the argument, the knock, or at least, hey, this is a kid who still needs some more experience, right?
He only started a few short games.
He was considered raw,
right?
Very a good prospect, but raw,
very raw.
Well, right? Maybe you got to bake that into the equation. Well,
sure you do, but you got to bake it into the equation while you're still trying to win. And remember, he missed his rookie year with a knee injury, and so I mean, there's a lot of different factors in there that are on the quarterback's plate. It makes it really hard. And you just never know. This is the problem. You know, in most college systems, I'm not saying in Michigan, but in most college systems, the quarterback goes like this. And every guy, the 11 guys, so think about the huddle right here. Every guy goes, and looks to the sideline, and then they hold up a card with a chicken in a barn, you know, and a pitchfork.
That's right.
Right? And you know, and
a pitchfork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a stack of hay. And they go, oh, we got red barn chicken pitchfork hay on two. And then they go, and they hand clap. And so all of a sudden you go from you go to all the stuff I just said. And you got to process, Mike. And what separates guys from, you know, from being able to play in the NFL versus not being able to play in the NFL is how quickly you can process information. You can take it into your eyes, you can process it in your brain, and you can react instantly. And the guys that can do that, those guys can play. And the guys who can't, those guys can't play.
This is the Odyssey Radio Network and the Sing of Truth podcast. Up next, we have some great viewers and listeners out there who are very good at processing, and they have questions, they have feedback that you will answer with question mark coming up next.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
We roll on with the Stinking Truth podcast all across football America on the Odyssey Radio Network. It is time for the segment every week that so many people look forward to. I look forward to. You look forward to. And that is Question Mark, when you answer the questions that come in from some of our great listeners. You ready to roll?
Yes, I am.
All right. This is from Paul in Pacific Beach, La Jolla, San Diego.
La Jolla.
La Jolla. I know what you want to say.
La Jolla man clings to life. All right, go ahead.
Derwin James is one of your favorite players. How are you feeling now that he's been made the highest paid safety in the NFL for the second time?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's reset the safety market now twice.
I did a Chargers game a few years ago. He was my first request to get into the production meeting. He is one, I mean, smile that lights up the room is just nothing but energy. I love me some Derwin James, and he is an ultimate chess piece. I mean, you watch him line up, man, in nickel, he can play in the nickel over the slot. He could play in nickel at the will linebacker on the, you know, on the backside. In dime, he can play the mic. Like he'll rush off the edge. He is the ultimate chess piece. And every time you break the huddle, you got to find out where Derwin James is. He'll play deep middle safety. He'll play on the line of scrimmage. He'll play at the linebacker level. Like I said, he'll play at the nickel level. I mean, that dude can play anywhere, and that dude's a football playing Jesse. He's a chess piece, and he's just one of the best players in football. And I'll be honest, man, that is a guy that I think, you know, we talk about guys that kind of redefine positions. That is a guy that allows you to never have to change personnel at any given time. So you can say, hey, man, and Jesse Minter did this as the defense coordinator of the Chargers last year. Jesse Minter said, hey, man, we're going to match your 12 personnel or your two-back personnel with nickel because we got a chess piece. We got a star in Derwin James. So where a lot of teams, when you get into heavy personnel, you know, big personnel, tiger, whatever, you know, base, they'll just go, you know, we're not going to run guys on and off the football field. We're not going to run another linebacker on or run a nickel guy off. We're just going to let Derwin James play because he can defend the run and he can cover your slot man to man. He can blitz and he can defend the run like a linebacker. And he plays linebacker half the time. I find him phenomenal. I think that Seattle, what's the kid's name? Emmanuel or whatever his name is. I said that wrong. I know I did. I apologize. But it's the same. I think that's what people are trying to find across the National Football League. The kid from Toledo in the draft this year, that was a kid that played that way as well.
Well, speaking of Seattle, we got one here. Comes in from Mark listening in Seattle, who asked, Stink, what do you think of Mike McDonald not liking the term running it back for the Super Bowl champs, instead using the term running it forward? That seems kind of curious to me. And I want to ask you, as one of the few people walking this planet that know what it's like to be a repeat Super Bowl champion, go ahead, take a bow. What makes it so difficult?
Yeah, well, I think first, let me address Mike McDonald. As far as running it forward, man, like I've had this conversation. We just had it with John Harbaugh. I've had it with Sean Payton. I've had it with Mike McDonald. I've had it with a lot of different guys in this business. It's not just your 53-man roster. It's not just having players. It's having the right players. Having guys that can do unique things, but having guys that are sold out for the program. Having guys that are sacrificial, having guys that are the right guys, and rewarding the right guys so that you see, as an organization, if I do it the right way, I will also be rewarded when the time comes. And I think that's what becomes so incredibly important. It you know, it's not talent. I say this all the time. Talent's wasted on talented people. It's the right talent. And it's the right guys that really, you know, as cliche as this may sound, guys that will put the team in front or ahead of themselves. Great leaders care more about the people they lead than they care about themselves. And the guys that are willing to make those sacrifices, the guys that are willing to be professionals, those are the guys that you can win with, that you can win back-to-back championships with. So I know that's what they preach. That's what they believe in. And that's the type of player they want.
I think also, though, aren't NFL coaches, they're really paranoid about things becoming stagnant or being perceived as stagnant. And it seems like NFL coaches go to great lengths to not live in the past. You know, running it back means we're almost kind of, you know, banking on what happened last year to happen again.
Right.
Whereas running it forward, it's new. We're looking ahead rather than looking back.
Yeah.
Sean Payton, you referenced Sean. He always talks about how it doesn't matter how many guys you're bringing back. It's like a game piece. You know, you play a game of Monopoly, for example.
Right.
Once that game's over, you tilt the board over, all the pieces go back into the box, and you start all over again. And that's the analogy he uses for what the start of another season means. So it seems like these coaches are very paranoid about the idea of we're not looking back.
Right.
We're only looking forward.
Well, and you got to remember, there's a lot of coaches out there that will give you the, you know, hey, this guy may be, you know, a problem, or he may have a scarlet letter on him or whatever the case may be. But under my expert tutelage, you know, we're going to get this guy right. And then there are those organizations that would just say there's other players out there that are good, and I'm just going to walk away from that. And, you know, I had this opportunity with the Broncos, and I don't want to get into, there's some proprietary things that they didn't want.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, us to talk about. But one of the things, it was funny because I studied, you know, all the first round guys, and there were some players on there that I absolutely loved. And the Broncos were like showing some of their draft stuff. And some of these
players. This was an alumni event you guys were a part of. Yeah.
And some of the guys that I loved were on their do not draft. And it was either, you know, background things or it was injury things, but they were like, hey man, we have a standard and these guys for whatever reason don't meet our standard, and we're not going to be, you know, and these guys got drafted in the first round, but the Broncos had them off their board because of their principles. And I think that's admirable. And I think those things are really good to create the culture that you want to create as an organization.
Well, speaking of the Broncos, this one comes in from Kevin Hart. I don't think it's that Kevin Hart, but a different Kevin Hart.
Could be.
Good for you, Kevin Hart. But he asked, should the Broncos welcome back Von Miller even as a third down situational pass rusher? Von, who's moved around to several teams, still really, really thinks of himself as a Bronco, and recently was talking about, yeah, I'm lobbying, man. I want to come back. I still can play. I want to be a mentor. Does it make sense for a homecoming with the Broncos and Von Miller?
No, I just don't. I think that ship has sailed. I think they've created with Zach Allen. They've created with Jonathan Cooper, with Nick Benito. They've created their own leadership guys. And you know, face it, like Von Miller is one of the greatest Broncos has ever played. I mean, he is phenomenal, right? But even when he was here playing for the Broncos, he wasn't the leader of the football team. It was Peyton Manning. It was DeMarcus Ware. He even mentioned DeMarcus Ware as being that guy that he'd like to be able to mentor, like DeMarcus Ware mentored to him. But DeMarcus Ware was still starting. Like, he came in and started 15 to 16 games, I think, his first year, and 10 out of 11 games his second year. And, like, he, when they won the Super Bowl, like, he was a start. He was a prominent, big-time Pro Bowl football player. Vaughn would become situationally. Last year with Washington, he had 37% of the snaps. The other thing, the Broncos are like, if you're going to be a Bronco, like a backup here, you're going to, one, you got to play special teams. Vaughn's not going to play special teams. You got to practice. You got to give the offense a look. How much are you going to ask him to practice? Yeah. I think they've developed their own leadership, And I just don't think he's going to be a fit with the Denver Broncos. I just don't think they have that interest in Vaughn.
Everything you said makes sense. But in a time where increasingly you feel like athletes are just mercenaries out there for hire, NIL, I'm going to take the bag wherever I can. I don't know. There's something kind of cool about a guy who just lets everybody know, I love this place. I never wanted to leave. I want to go back. This is where I want to finish.
Yeah.
He refers to them as we and us. I don't know. It's pretty refreshing. You'd love to see that enthusiasm get paid back.
It is pretty cool. I think one of the other things you sometimes got to worry a little bit about, Mike, is bringing a celebrity into your locker room. Vaughn Miller is he's NFL royalty celebrity. And how does that affect, how does that affect your culture, your young guys, all this? I love Vaughn. Vaughn is great. I don't think he fits.
Well, listen, we love all the questions you send us. Please continue to give us your feedback here on the Stinking Truth podcast. I know Mark loved all the feedback he got from all of you on the Jackson Dart Abdul Carter situation. So please, on behalf of Mark, please keep them coming.
Right. Just a clown show.
But keep them coming.
Oh, yeah. Keep them coming at me. You're a racist. You know? All right. Great. I appreciate that. Hey, listen, for everybody involved, the Stinking Truth podcast, for the Odyssey Radio Network, thank you so much for making us a part of your day. For all of our listeners out there on Apple or Spotify, thank you so much. And all our YouTube followers as well. Make sure you subscribe. We'll be back with you guys later on next week. We appreciate you. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.